This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show with Jason Hartman. The economic storm brewing around the world is set to spill into all aspects of our lives. Are you prepared? Where are you going to turn for the critical life skills necessary to survive and prosper? The Holistic Survival Show is your family's insurance for a better life. Jason will teach you to think independently, to understand threats, and how to create the ultimate action plan. Sudden change or worst case scenario, you'll be ready. Welcome to Holistic Survival, your key resource for protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Jason Hartman.
Hey, it's my pleasure to welcome Eric Steckelbeck to the show. He is the terrorism analyst for CBN News, contributing editor to Family Security Matters, author of The Brotherhood, America's Next Great Enemy, The Terrorist Next Door, How the Government is Deceiving You About the Islamist Threat, and his new book, ISIS Exposed, Beheadings, Slavery, and the Hellish Reality of Radical Islam. Eric, welcome. How are you?
Hey, good, Jason. Good to be with you.
Yeah, it's good to have you on. So we all see this barbaric behavior going on in the news and the stonings, the beheadings. And one thing that I just want to say at the outset, I cannot believe that Western liberals, especially Western female liberals, seem to give radical Islam a pass. I just do not understand that. It's the most illogical thing ever, possibly. Do you have any insight into that?
You know, that's a real head scratcher, right? Yeah. That we've been talking about since 9/11, really, Jason. Look, when the Taliban, the most misogynistic anti-feminist movement ever, in current history at least, was oppressing women left and right. And feminists, the left, didn't really have much to say about it. And now ISIS, literally, in my book, Jason, I outline how ISIS runs brothels in Syria and Iraq, where they literally have sex slaves in the year 2015. ISIS fighters will come off the battlefield and they will literally have sex slaves waiting for them. Why do women not say anything, on the women on the left in particular? I think it goes back to left-wing ideology, Jace, in many cases, where the hard left sees Muslims and Islam as oppressed. These are third world people who the West has kept down. America, Israel, look, we've been occupiers. We've been imperialist powers. So they are loath to point the finger, is the left, point the finger at people that they traditionally see as victims. They see Muslims in the Middle East, North Africa, South Asia as victims of Western imperialism. So calling them on their open misogyny and oppression of women, wow, that really makes the left's head explode, because that's one of their cherished tenets, that Muslims are persecuted and victims. And then to, man, to have to turn the tables there and actually hold Muslims accountable for their actions, that's something the left can't do.
How is it that the radical Islamist under Sharia can stone gays to death, or at the very least imprison them for many, many years just for mm-hmm. being gay, yet right. if the owner of Chick-fil-A makes a comment, a passing remark, he's vilified as the most evil person ever? How do you rationalize that?
Can't rationalize it, number one. Number two, I think it leads back to kind of what I just said, Jason, this left-wing ideology where, look, the hard left in this country, in the West, is hostile to Judeo-Christian Western civilization. They're hostile to it. I think you see that in the Chick-fil-A incident. I think you see it in many cases. I think it starts at the top with President Obama. This is a man who at every turn takes pot shots at Christians, takes pot shots at the Jewish state of Israel.
He takes pot shots at white people all the time, too.
Look, he seems to defend Islam at every turn. Goes out of his way to say nice things about Islam, to excuse bad behavior by a growing segment of the Islamic faith, the radical Islamic wing. So look, we have a real problem there with the left. At the end of the day, look, President Obama, for instance, said that he wanted to, and I quote, fundamentally transform America.
He's doing a good job, unfortunately.
He's doing a good job of it, unfortunately, is right. And this is all kind of in the same wheelhouse for the left. All of this madness that we see, whether it's the examples you cited or anything else, this all goes with that ideology where, at the end of the day, they do not like traditional America. They don't like the tenets and the values that this country was founded on, and they don't like Judeo-Christian values. They don't like biblical values, the Ten Commandments, none of that. That is the left's worst nightmare. So I think you're seeing that in all these cases. And look, Islam does not represent Judeo-Christian Western civilization. Islam is far as you can get from that. So the left's tendency is to embrace it, a kind of the enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of relationship.
That's just so far-fetched, though, in this case. I mean, I can understand that logic
in
some cases, but in this one, it's just, yeah, I mean.
Oh, Jason, look, I agree with you. The left is completely short-sighted here because if they think they can get in bed with the radical Islamists and that everything will be fine, look, at the end of the day, when it all shakes out, the left will be the first ones with their heads on the chopping block if the Islamists ever got their way.
Yeah.
So I agree with you 100%. I didn't say it was smart of the left, but this is the way they look at it. They think they can co-opt Islamists and kind of use them as foot soldiers to advance their agenda. It's just not going to happen. They may be, both of them are hostile to Judeo-Christian Western civilization for different reasons. But man, if the Islamists got their way, the left, we saw it in Iran in 1979, Jason, when the Ayatollahs came to power, they were helped by the socialists, the Marxists, and the first person, the Ayatollah Khomeini, threw into prison, the first people, I should say, were the left, were the Marxists in Iran.
Wow, it's just crazy. The other thing I've never been able to get my head around is that I know many, many wonderful, loving, kind Muslim people who believe in Islam, who are very devout, and they are just wonderful human beings. I mean, they go out of their way to just be giving and charitable and do nice things for other people. Why don't they speak up? This is not what they believe. They don't believe you should stone people to death. They don't believe in this kind of barbaric violence. They don't really speak out. They, just like the left in America, give them a pass, it seems like. I just don't understand where the outrage is.
Well, look, I think there's a few things going on. And in terms of the left, I can't get inside their heads, but I can give you my educated, I guess, opinion, my observations. For them not speaking out when it comes to Muslims who
are they in fear?
Yes, I mean, that's what I was just going to say. Look, when it comes to not speaking out, Jason, I think many times truly moderate Muslims who oppose jihad, who oppose Sharia, I think there's a fear factor. You know, in my book, ISIS Exposed, I talk about an encounter I had in Boston, Massachusetts, of all places, a very liberal place, right, with a moderate Muslim who came into a hotel room where I was interviewing him on camera, and he said, hey, he had a disguise on his face, his hat was covering his head, he had a disguise on his face, and he said, Eric, I can't go on camera, I'll be killed.
Wow.
This man was worried for the safety of himself and his family. This is Boston, Massachusetts. He was afraid that locals would turn on him if he went on camera and spoke against jihad and the Muslim Brotherhood and Sharia, etc. So there's definitely a fear factor. There's also just cultural factors. Look, some of these folks were used to at home, if they spoke out, you know, being thrown in prison. I think that's another factor. In some cases, I think the silence is complicity. I think there's some who agree with what the bad guys are doing, but, you know, they're not going to maybe pick up the gun themselves, but they like what they're seeing. But look, I work with many, as you said, moderate, peace-loving Muslims who are great people who I'd go to war with, you know, who oppose ISIS passionately.
When you said you'd go to war with, not against, right? I just wanted to make
that. Go to war with,
yeah,
side by side against
the
jihadists, yes,
right.
Of course.
Okay.
These are courageous individuals. We've seen courageous individual cases of truly moderate Muslims speaking up. That's great, but we have not seen a mass movement. Let's be honest. I'm still waiting to see the Million Muslim March here on the National Mall in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
We just aren't seeing it. After 9/11, Paris, Ottawa, the rise of ISIS, etc., etc., We're just not seeing it. We're not seeing it. And frankly, Jason, I don't know if we're going to see it, if we haven't seen it by now.
Okay, so among all of these crazy things that I just can't get my head around, and I think a lot of people are similar to me in this case, the other one that blows my mind is that I hear these news stories about ISIS recruiting online, about young female Americans going over to fight with ISIS. First of all, I've never seen an ISIS recruiting ad on Facebook or anything, but I'm told on the news that they're there. You got to be kidding. Really? They say ISIS is this huge online marketer.
Well, yeah. I mean, this
tell
is
me about
ISIS.
That. I can't
right.
Imagine.
Well, this is very important, Jason. I devote a whole chapter to it in my book. ISIS is a different beast in many ways from any terrorist movement we've seen, but in particular, with their skill online and their skill in recruitment, they are, whether it's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. For instance, ISIS and its supporters send out 90 tweets per minute. That's astounding.
What is their Twitter account? I mean, like, really, people follow this? People in the
They have dozens, if not hundreds, of Twitter accounts. Individual ISIS members have many, many Twitter accounts.
Does Twitter take any stand? Do they close them down?
They do. Twitter closes them down. Close them down, but it's kind of like a game of whack-a-mole, Jason. You close one down and another one pops up. It's an epidemic, and I don't use that word lightly.
Right.
And their main means of communication in many ways is through Twitter, through Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. This is how ISIS is doing it here in the West. And their propaganda arm, the people who control their social media, their propaganda operations in Iraq and Syria, many of them are Westerners who were raised here, who are fluent in English, who know how to directly connect with people. Another thing they're doing is they're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on these slickly produced propaganda videos that really look like a Hollywood action flick sometimes. That's another way. But the social media avenue, I mean, look, they're quoting hip-hop lyrics on Twitter. They're referencing Hollywood movies. ISIS is packaging this in a way that they're making it seem cool to misguided souls here in the West. And they are so expert at doing it. The main reason, I believe, is that, again, ISIS has this Western presence. We've had up to 180 U.S. citizens and up to 5,000 Western Europeans who have left their comfortable homes here to go to Iraq and Syria and join ISIS.
For what? I mean, what is the big draw? Like, why would someone leave this civilized, modern culture and go back to the primitive days of barbarianism? I can't fathom that.
Yeah. Well, look, there's a few things going on. Number one, success breeds attraction. ISIS controls 35,000 square miles of territory right now in the heart of the Middle East. That's an area the size of Great Britain. They rule over 8 million people. So you have success, obviously. They've declared the caliphate, this Islamic state. That's been the great dream of radical Islamists for almost a century, to reestablish the great Islamic state or caliphate. So that's another thing. And at the end of the day, the ideology. And look, the ideology centers on global domination, the caliphate. And ISIS is doing this with such boldness, such audacity, that it's really become a magnet for radicals around the world. ISIS is out there. They're beheading. They're burning. They're doing it on social media. They touch every corner of the globe. ISIS has recruited people from 90 countries. So it's a global phenomenon. You have the social media aspect of it is an attraction, and the way they package it there. You also have on-the-ground recruitment. An ISIS recruiter will find people, and they'll say, hey, come to the caliphate. You'll be at the vanguard of this great Islamic empire. You'll be a glorious holy warrior. Everyone will know your name. Well, that can be an alluring message for an 18, 19, 20-year-old person. But the key thing here is ideology, this radical Islamic jihadist ideology. It's not poverty. President Obama gave a speech back in February saying, look, the jihadists have legitimate grievances. There's a lack of economic opportunity in the Muslim world. I detail in my book ISIS Exposed.
Is that our fault, though? Is that because we've oppressed them in some ways? I mean, from here to there, you know, halfway across the world?
Well, Jason, you know what? To hear the left say it, yeah. They would say the West has, as I was saying earlier, the West has kept Muslims down, and we've oppressed the Muslim world, and we've kept them down. We've kept
in what way? What have
down.
We done to? What is their claim? What have we done to them?
Hey, Jason, I don't agree with it. I'm just telling you the way they look at it. Look, they believe we've occupied Muslim lands, been imperialists, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, this is a left-wing view of the world, that America and Israel are not forces for good in the Middle East. We're forces for bad. Look, they the way they view it, well, Israel's occupying Palestinian land and they stole the land. That's how the left looks at it. And they look at us, look, we invaded Iraq unjustly, et cetera, et cetera.
See, there, I don't think the left is all wrong on that. I mean, I think they have at least a plausible argument on some of that stuff, kind of do, okay?
Well, if you do, that's fine. But you'd have to ask, Jason,
I wouldn't just
the questions
totally
you're asking
shut them
me,
down,
no offense.
But yeah.
Some of these
right.
questions you're asking yeah. me, you might want to ask a leftist or a liberal.
Yeah, right,
you're
well,
asking
yeah,
me again and
enough.
Again
yeah,
to
no,
interpret
know,
their,
know,
I'm not a psychiatrist,
I know,
and I can't,
yeah.
you know what I mean?
So, no, I appreciate it. That's,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
true. That's true. I know.
I share your outrage, and I'm perplexed too, but I'm trying to play armchair psychologist and analyze why the left thinks the way it does as best I can, but it's not easy to explain irrational behavior that they have, in my view.
Okay, so online jihad 3.0. You talked a little bit about that, but is there anything more that the listeners should know? What else is part of this online jihadist campaign?
Well, the way that ISIS is so prevalent, can't add much more than I already added in terms of the recruitment
yeah.
and reaching out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, etc. It's very important. You know, that's very central and integral to what they're doing right now. So look, what I believe we should do is utilize that against them. ISIS mm-hmm. is using social media. They're using the web. I think the U.S. government should start a movement online against ISIS, against the ideology, because, again, it's all about the ideology, and you have to target the ideology, discredit the ideology. You think of Radio Free Europe during the 1980s, mm-hmm. where we attacked communist and Soviet ideology in Eastern Europe. We need that today in the Muslim world, and we're just not getting it. The Obama administration is just not invested in that.
Yeah, right, right. Okay, so what really is ISIS, and why is it that we've only heard about them recently? I mean, has ISIS been around for a long time? And by the way, is it ISIL or ISIS?
Well, I refer to them as ISIS, Jason, the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. You know, President Obama uses ISIL, and quite frankly, I'm not sure why he does, because when you're using ISIL, that's the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant. Same group as ISIS, different name. But when you use ISIL, you give them the entire region. The Levant encompasses Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Syria, Iraq, Lebanon, Israel, Egypt, etc. So I'd much rather just call them ISIS, which is Syria and Iraq, which is bad enough. But why call them ISIL and give them the whole ball of wax, the whole region? That said, they've been around for a while. Many Americans just heard of them maybe a year ago, but the Obama administration has known very well what was going on.
Right.
Rewind.
Can the blame be placed on Obama in any shape or form for really pulling out of Iraq, you know,
yeah.
lessening our presence there? Is this, you know, nature abhors a vacuum, right? It seems like we went from bad to worse. I mean, it was difficult being there. Did we just, was that a huge mistake, pulling out?
Well, I believe it was. Look, the Iraq war was mishandled in many ways.
No
I'm
one would disagree
with
that. Yeah.
I'm not giving the Bush administration a pass at all. It was bungled in many ways. One thing we did get right was the troop surge. In 2007, 2008, the troop surge crushed al-Qaeda in Iraq. They were defeated. That was a success on every level. And Iraq was largely pacified for a time. Now, fast forward to December 2011, against the advice of all of his top generals and against the advice of diplomats and folks, former ambassadors who'd spent significant time in Iraq on both sides of the political aisle, President Obama withdrew every last U.S. troop from Iraq. Now, he did it, in my view, for purely political reasons. He made a campaign promise in 2008 to withdraw troops from Iraq. He had to keep that promise. That's what he did. He went into the 2012 election saying, hey, I ended the war in Iraq. So he did that, and almost simultaneously, I detail this in the book, we saw a wave of suicide bombings, a wave of assassinations of Iraqi officials. All of a sudden, al-Qaeda in Iraq, which had been crushed, rose from the ashes, spread its tentacles next door into Syria, and grew into the beast we have today in ISIS. And President Obama gets intelligence reports across his desk every day. He knew what was happening in Iraq. He knew it was unraveling. Yet he goes on national TV in January 2014 and calls ISIS the JV team of terrorism. A few months later, they roll into Mosul and conquer Iraq's second largest city, and the rest is jihadi history.
Wow, yeah. Any speculation, and I know I'm asking you another question I should be asking a leftist, you know, any speculation as to why Obama would ignore this? It doesn't seem like it's good PR for him.
Well, yeah. I mean, number one, I think he had to stick to the I'm getting us out of Iraq card. That's something he was sworn, just like closing down Gitmo, he swore to do it. No matter what the consequence, he swore to do that. In terms of ignoring it, look, this is a man who was so focused on fundamentally transforming America in domestic policy. It seems that he wants to manage the ISIS problem until he leaves office. Seems to be his view. He just doesn't consider the global jihad and Islamic terrorism as a major, major threat. He doesn't seem to. He seems to consider it as a passing threat, a minor threat that can be dealt with in federal courtrooms. He doesn't see it as a global war or a global jihad. He sees it as a criminal action. These people are criminals who must be brought to justice.
And read their rights first. You've got to read their rights first.
Exactly.
You know, give them Miranda rights and appoint a public defender, too. You know, why not?
That's how he views it. This is the view of a President Obama and a great chunk of the left. So this is what you have.
Maybe he can send the NYPD and the LAPD over there, and let's just see how they do. You know, maybe some squad cars. This is an
This seems to be the thought. You're not going to get an all-out, full-blown effort against ISIS from this president. It's just not going to happen. He is going to manage it until he leaves office.
Talk to us about our southern border in the U.S. I mean, you would think post 9/11, the border with Mexico would have been hermetically sealed. If there ever was a reason to finally get control of our border, that would have been it. What do you think is going on with that as a political football, but also what are the possible threats?
I think one of the most chilling passages in my book, ISIS Exposed, was an interview I had with a former CIA clandestine services officer who told me, Eric, the thing that keeps me up at night is the possibility that an ISIS terrorist could cross our southern border, our poorest southern border, with a chemical or biological weapon and set it off in an American city. And remember, our Canadian border is much bigger than the southern border. So as you said, it's been almost 14 years since 9/11, and the border has never been more insecure. It's a recipe for disaster. You cannot sustain yourself long term as a nation state and defend your citizenry if you refuse to secure your borders. It's a disaster waiting to happen.
Yeah, so here's one thing I don't understand, and this kind of makes me feel the government's explanation of the terrorist threat under both administrations is overblown, is because it seems so easy to get us. If they wanted to get us by another attack or causing some damage, they would have done it by now. I mean, it's been 14 years since 9/11 almost. And they certainly had opportunities before that, and they took advantage of a couple of those, obviously. But, you know, why haven't they gotten us by now?
Number one, they have gotten us, not on the scale of 9/11, obviously. But the Boston bombings was nothing to sneeze at. You had four people and over 250 people injured. A major American city was shut down for the better part of a week. We've had several attempted attacks. It isn't for lack of effort, Jason. I mean, Europe, we had the Paris attacks just a few months ago. We've had London, Madrid. It's not 9/11. It's not a history world-altering type thing. But it's not for lack of effort. Number one, we've had great law enforcement and intelligence work. Number two, we've had a lot of luck. I'll be honest with you. We have thwarted several attacks. We've had dozens and dozens of plots on U.S. soil, but by the grace of God, they have not succeeded, many of them. Think of the underwear bomber, Christmas Day 2009.
Yeah, right.
The bomb didn't
go off.
The Times Square bomber in 2010. Yeah. So it's a serious threat, I mean, without a doubt. In Western Europe, even more so than in America, it's not for lack of effort. They would love to carry out another 9/11. Yes, it's been 14 years. But that can't lull us to sleep just because we haven't been hit in that kind of way again in 14 years. Another aspect of this is they've kind of shifted their tactics, and I talk about this in the book, where it's smaller scale, low-tech, inexpensive type attacks. But what they would like to do is turn the U.S. and Europe into guerrilla war zones where you're having a Fort Hood, a Boston bombing, a Paris-style attack on a regular basis. And that can be a pretty effective strategy for them. That would cause a lot of economic and psychological terror. And look, airplanes remain a target. As we saw on 9/11, that remains a target. We've done a great job the past 14 years. We've had a great run of luck as well. But I would not get too complacent that just because we haven't had another 9/11 in the past 14 years that we're out of the woods yet.
Yeah, yeah, very, very good points. Give out your website. Tell people where they can find your books and more information about you.
EricStackelbeck.com. That's EricStackelbeck.com. EricStackelbeck.com. And you can find my books there. You can find my writings there. And you can go to buy the book ISIS Exposed and my other books, Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold.
Yeah, good stuff. Eric, any final thoughts or prevention ideas? We didn't really talk a whole lot about what to do about the problem. You know, maybe just a closing thought on that, or it's your floor.
I would say a good place to start, and this almost sounds simplistic, but let me explain. I think we need to smash ISIS militarily in Iraq and Syria. Now, I'm not advocating a ground invasion or a heavy ground footprint. That's not what I'm saying. This is what I mean. Think back to 2001 in Afghanistan. We had special forces, the CIA, on the ground working with the Northern Alliance, and they routed the Taliban. We can do the same thing today in Iraq and Syria, working with the Kurds, who are fierce fighters, who are very pro-American, working with Assyrian Christians, with some moderate Iraqi Sunni tribes, who are begging for leadership. They need leadership. In a perfect world, they do it on their own. They're not capable right now of getting their act together and doing it on their own and defeating ISIS. But they need some kind of U.S. leadership. Again, that's not a heavy ground footprint. Special forces on the ground directing the attack? Yes, I think that's necessary. Look, limited airstrikes, which we're conducting now, have not done the trick. ISIS continues to grow and gain new followers. So if we're serious about decisively crushing this movement, then, and President Obama said, you know, that he was, I think we need more than just limited airstrikes. I think we need to crush ISIS militarily, like we did the German and Japanese war machines during World War II, before it metastasizes even more. And if you crush them, you will put a dent in the ideology and demoralize their followers around the world. But right now in Washington, D.C., there doesn't seem to be a will to do that.
Well, it's something else. Eric Steckelbeck, thank you so much for joining us today. We live in scary times with this. I think this is quite possibly the world's biggest problem. I know that may be a leap to some to say that, but
I agree.
This means we could go back to not the Stone Ages, but it feels like almost there.
Pretty close, yeah.
It really does. It's an anti-modernity, anti-civility, anti-human decency, human rights. I mean, it's just every advancement the world has made over the past, 1,300 years since a lot of this started to evolve, they want to take us right back there. That's how it appears to me. So if someone thinks I'm wrong about that, you're invited on the show to give your rebuttal. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I just don't see any other point to it. But Eric, again, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Jason. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you for joining us today for the Holistic Survival Show, protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Be sure to listen to our Creating Wealth show, which focuses on exploiting the financial and wealth creation opportunities in today's economy. Learn more at www.jasonhartman.com or search Jason Hartman on iTunes. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, offering very general guidelines and information. Opinions of guests are their own, and none of the content should be considered individual advice. If you require personalized advice, please consult an appropriate professional. Information deemed reliable, but not guaranteed. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.